The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
We're so glad you've stopped by. Welcome to Around the World in a Glass, presented by Sportsman's, with your host, Kimber Stonehouse. Come indulge with us in the next hour as we explore a region of the world, its wine and spirits. We'll also talk about food, tours, and other amenities unique to this area. Sit back and enjoy. Now, here's Kimber Stonehouse.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to Around the World in a Glass. This week, we're keeping it closer to home. We're going to focus on the area in California, specifically Napa Valley. But we just kind of thought it would be a fun place to start. Last week, as you know, we did some Wine 101, and hopefully you all learned something. So this week, closer to home, and we're going to talk about California and Napa Valley. Did you know that 90% of all the wine produced in the United States comes from California? I did not know that, actually, until I was reading about reading up and brushing up a little bit just for this actual episode. I didn't realize that it was quite that much. I thought it was a little less than that. They have the perfect climate. They just grow the most awesome grapes, and easily. The climate is right. The weather is right. The soil is right. It's kind of like, you know, just this awesome little neighborhood over there in California to grow grapes. Specifically, the primary grapes grown in California and all over the United States are Chardonnay, Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Merlot, and Sauvignon Blanc. So those are the big ones. Of course, we grow nearly everything else under the sun. You probably had Bernarda and Malbec and, you know, some Riesling maybe. Syrah is a big one, or Shiraz, whichever way you want to call that. Petite Syrah. The list kind of goes on forever. But the primary ones are the ones mentioned: Chardonnay, Cab, Zinfandel, Merlot, and Sauvignon Blanc. So when we focus on United States wine, specifically California, one of the things that it's important to remember is that we have a lot of freedom in the United States as opposed to other countries. So here in the States, the wineries can do as they like. They're allowed to plant whatever they want to plant. You know, if they want to plant Cab, and maybe it grows well there, maybe it doesn't, they can still do it. Countries like France and Italy, Spain, they have a lot of laws, France probably being the toughest set of laws. And in certain regions, you can only plant the grapes they tell you you can plant. And then not only can you only plant the grapes they tell you you can plant, they also tell you how to make those grapes into wine. And there are certain restrictions. You can add sugar or acidity, or you can do this, you can do that. But there's a lot of restrictions. And in the United States, the main thing that we care about is that the wine tastes good to the consumer. There's not a lot of rules and regulations. We do have some, and the Bureau of Tobacco and Alcohol, the TTB, is the one responsible for that. And some of those we'll cover a little bit later when we talk about the labels, and we'll just cover that briefly because it's cool and it's good to know, but at the same time, I'm more interested in what's in the bottle and what we're tasting it for and what we're drinking it for, what we're pairing it with, and that kind of thing. So, you know, as you're buying your wines and you get maybe a little frustrated because I know that this is a California wine, why doesn't it taste like these other 25 California wines I've had? It's a California Cab, but it's totally different than all the others. Well, part of that is due to the soil and the makeup in California, as we're going to get to here in a second. And it's also due to that lack of regulation. So the grapes can be grown. They can be planted where they want to plant them. They can be grown and tended. We call that viticultural, all the things that happen while it's still in the vineyard. And then when it gets into the winery, after they're picked as hopefully ripe grapes, once it gets into the winery, then the winemaker has total freedom there too. And whereas in other countries, that's not the same. So, like if you're in Gaine-Sancerre in France, there's a lot of restrictions there and a lot of guidelines and a lot of ways you do things and a lot of ways you cannot do things. And still put that on the label. Whereas in California, Napa Valley, you can have two wineries next door to each other with the same style soil and maybe even what we call the same kind of clone of, say, Cabernet, but the wines are completely different. And that's because of how they tend the grapes and how they grow and how they water them, all those sorts of things, as well as how they take care of it in the winery. And so it's just a lot of freedom in the States. And sometimes it makes it frustrating, and sometimes it just makes it fantastic because there's always a surprise in the new wine that you try. Hopefully a good surprise, occasionally a not-so-good surprise. Alrighty, so let's get into what's so special about Napa Valley. If you're new to wine or if you're maybe like European wines, you just don't get what the fuss is about Napa Valley. It's just, you know, a little place in California. Well, the soil, first of all, we're going to start with that because that's where the grapes grow. And if you think about, I don't know, most people eat fruit, and I pay attention when I'm eating, like, grapes, for example, or peaches, and all those kinds of things. Sometimes, especially in the summer when they're really ripe, you get one that's like, wow, this was incredible. And then you get to paying attention at, say, your local farmer's market, and you realize that the ones you really, really love come from the same region. And you're like, wow, that cantaloupe was fantastic because when I was growing up, they used to come from Beardstown, Illinois. I grew up in the Midwest. And that cantaloupe and that watermelon that came from Beardstown was fabulous. But if it came from, you know, another randomly named town, and Beardstown, by the way, was not very big, but we used to get some really good watermelon and cantaloupe from there. But, you know, you kind of paid attention to that. Well, it's the same with Napa Valley. You get to paying attention to the subregions and Napa Valley itself, and you pay attention to the soil, because that's what made that watermelon taste so great from that little town, was the fact that it was grown there. Maybe there was more sand in the soil. Maybe there was a richerness because Beardstown actually often flooded. So, you know, maybe that's why the soil was just richer and more fertilized. All right, so back to Napa Valley. The geology of Napa Valley is based on volcanoes. There were, from my reading and my understanding, is lots of volcanoes and eruptions that happened about 2 million years ago. So what's happened is you have nearly three dozen different soil types. Okay, now this is, my brother's a geologist, so he explained this a little bit to me, so I'm going to give you the easy version. Nearly three dozen soil types belonging to, there's like 12 major classifications for soil, and these three dozen soil types fit into eight of those 12. So in this little bitty region that's probably not even, if you're really, you know, stretching it a little bit to include the mountain AVAs and things, you're looking at, you know, about 40 or 50 miles total, and then about maybe 5 miles wide. It's really a very small little section over there in California. So they've got nearly three dozen soil types, and then those soil types fall into eight of 12 major soil classifications worldwide. So there's only 12 in the entire world of these soil classifications, and eight of them are represented, and apparently well represented, in Napa. So that gives you all kinds of different environments for these grapes. So you have the same grape or the same seeds and rootstock that you take and you plant in, say, three different areas or 10 different areas or however many different areas you want, you're going to get a different type of grape growing. It's going to be fed, and the nutrition in it is going to be different every time. So that allows for all these different expressions of the same grape. All right, so I just think that's really cool because that tells you why it's so vastly different. And it's a good thing we don't have all those restrictions because there's so many different soil types there. You think about those restrictions that they have in France. That's not going to work for Napa. You know, you're going to be having a little problem there if you try to take all those different soil types and put them into one set of restricted guidelines. So all of those volcanic eruptions and all those soil types create what we call benches and terraces and canyons, and those are kind of self-explanatory. You get what those are. Just different areas of different soil types and different rock formations and limestone and things like that. So that creates different nutrients for the wines and the grapes that we're turning into the wines. All right, so that's enough about geology. I don't want you to all fall asleep because I'm giving you a geology lecture. All righty, moving on, just a little quick history. Most people know if they're any type of, never mind, let's go on. Most people know about Prohibition. And here in the States are, some people call it the morality experiment. Back in the late, the early 1900s, almost 1920, I think it's 1918, 1919, somewhere in there. alcohol was prohibited in the United States, and it was overturned 10 or 11 years later, something like that. But anyway, what came out of Prohibition was that Americans liked things very sweet, because the only alcohol you could get during Prohibition were things like bathtub gin and moonshine and things that were really harsh. I mean, wow. Even the stuff that we would call moonshine today does not taste at all like what they were drinking back then. And to fix that and be able to still drink, you would need to add a lot of sugar and a lot of fruit and a lot of stuff to kind of cover up the terrible taste. Well, so you come out of Prohibition, and what we end up with is a country that is addicted to sweetness and to sugar, especially where their alcohol drinks are concerned. So I don't know that we've moved 100% away from that. Every time I read a new article on the news, it's talking about our addiction to sugar. But anyway, we come out of Prohibition, and we're addicted to sugar. And they got to have the sugary drinks. They don't want things that are dry. As we discussed last week, dry is a flavor in the mouth that doesn't have a lot of sugar. So we come out of Prohibition, and, you know, things are just kind of moving along, and all the wines are sugary and sweet, and there's not much difference in that. And then along we come into the 60s, and Robert Mondavi has this kind of vision, and he believes that the United States, California specifically, and he was in Napa Valley, can make incredible wine. And that we can not only make incredible wine that people are going to love to drink, but we can compete on a worldwide scale. And right now, the French and the Italians, they got the market. And his belief is that we can compete against the big names. That was his vision, that we can make world-class wine and expensive wine and compete on the international market with the wines. And this is in the late 60s. So, you know, 1960s, 68, 69, somewhere in there is what his vision is. And if you've drank any wine, if you've had some wines, you've probably had Mondavi's wines at some point, either the inexpensive everyday drinkers or, you know, some of his incredible things that come from the Napa Valley. We carry often the Napa Valley specific AVA. We don't always carry the less expensive ones, but those we just think are really fantastic quality bottles, good, what we call bang for the buck. So Mondavi had this vision, and he shared it with some of his colleagues right there in the Napa Valley area. And then in the mid-70s, 1976, in fact, the Judgment of Paris took place. And the Judgment of Paris is something that we're probably going to have to continue discussing, because we're getting ready to go to break in a few minutes, and we're going to need to finish up there because I can't get through the whole thing of the Judgment of Paris. It is something, though, that you can always look up on Wikipedia, but it's a huge big deal. There's been movies about it, and it's just the most incredible thing. The world, some of the Napa Valley wines were sent to an international competition in Paris, 1976, and we are going to get ready to go to break. You know what? I am going to hang on because this is a great story, and I don't want to cut it short and try to fit all in the next couple of minutes. All right. After the break, we're going to finish up with Judgment of Paris, and we are going to move on into the wines and the grapes of Napa. We're going to get into the good stuff, some of the flavor profiles, and some of the cool stuff that Napa is known for. So we'll be right back, and after the break, we'll be discussing those wines and grapes of Napa. So in a few minutes, we'll be back.
News. Opinion.
Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
Tune in to the Voice America Variety Channel on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Voice America Variety broadcasts a diverse array of topics, reaching a global community. Our experts come from all walks of life, and the topics they discuss are everything from current events, arts and entertainment, leadership, parenting, relationships, self-improvement, career advice, and a variety of other topics. Check us out today. You're sure to find something of interest. Voice America Variety. Talk on today's hot topics.
Could you use some more organization in your life? Sure, we all could. But where to start? In the home? At work? With yourself? The answer is very likely yes, yes, and yes. Tune in to Let's Get Organized with Meryl Starr. It's all about how to let go of the clutter in your life, from the personal issues to the physical spaces. Meryl and her guests will work on a different area to improve each week so you can take back control in your life. Let's Get Organized with Meryl Starr airs live Fridays at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 6 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Around the World in a Glass, presented by Sportsman's, with your host, Kimber Stonehouse. If you have a question for one of our upcoming programs, please send an email to aroundtheworldinaglass@hotmail.com. That's aroundtheworldinaglass@hotmail.com. Now, back to our show.
All righty, back to Judgment of Paris. So, this big competition was going to be held in Paris, 1976, and some of the wineries in California decided they wanted to take part in this international competition. So France was known as the Mecca, the wine capital of the entire world. It was French wine. They've been doing it forever, and boy, did they know what they were doing. So the French were just at the top of the board on that. And so some of the winemakers in California, specifically in Napa Valley, decide they're going to send their wines to this Judgment of Paris. And the French that were there and the judges, they were like, oh no, this isn't going to be a problem. And it was a blind tasting, so they didn't know what anything was. They were called, you know, wine number one in a mystery foil brown bag or something, you know. At the store, sometimes we wrap them in foil so that we don't know the winery we're tasting, or we put them in a brown bag to do it blind and see if we can guess varietal and things like that. So, you know, they were blind. They didn't know what they were. They were labeled with numbers. And then the judges' sheets just had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, all the way up to like 20, I think is what it was. And then they tasted them and they rated them on a scale of, say, 1 to 20, if there were 20 wines, reds and whites. And then they did the unveiling. And Chateau Montelena, a wonderful, still to produce today, an absolutely wonderful Chardonnay, coming out of Napa Valley, got first in the whites. It beat out the other Chardonnays that were French. And, I mean, this is 1976. We're only about not even quite 10 years after Mondavi's vision that Napa could have fantastic world-class wines and could compete on a world-class scale. And this Chardonnay takes first at a blind tasting. Well, some of the judges were so offended that they protested and said that their ballots weren't accurately represented and they wanted their ballots back. So it was huge. It kind of was a launching point for Napa Valley wines and the United States in general to start receiving this worldwide acceptance that they were producing, that we were producing those kind of wines that could compete on that kind of scale with the top wines. You know, so it kind of started this revolution over in Napa, this new attitude of, you know what, we can make good wine and we can compete. And we want to make more wine. We want to have more people come in and make more wine. So the United States and California and some of the wealthier types, because even then land in Napa was not cheap. It was, of course, much cheaper than it is now, but it was not cheap. And they started buying up the land and planting Cabernet and Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, Cabernet, and what we're going to call the Bordeaux varietals were the primary ones. But before we get too far, let's talk real quick about labels in the U.S. And there are some things, just some little definitions where you need to go over real quick. One of them is, what is an AVA? I referred to it a little bit last week. This week I'm going to give you the book definition, and then you'll know what it is and at least why we do it. An AVA is an American viticultural area, all right? So it's a specific area. It's not a county. It's not done by what we call public government kind of lines, so county lines, state lines, city lines. It's not done by that. It's not that same. It's not going to copy that region. It's going to be based on soil composition. So the technical definition is it's a delimited grape-growing region distinguished by geographical features, the boundaries of which have been recognized and defined. All right, so basically it's an area of geological, okay, so sand, dirt, soil types, mountain structures, that kind of thing, that make it different than, say, its neighbor 5 miles down the street. All right, so it's an area that has a unifying set of features, and the government has recognized that. So now it's an American viticultural area, and Napa is a big one. For the states, but it has many, many what we call sub AVAs or sub regions that are inside it. So it has, you know, the what I call the mountain AVAs, or most people refer to as the mountain AVAs, Howell Mountain and Mount Veeder and Atlas Peak, Spring Mountain and Diamond Mountain, to name a few. And then you have the valley floor AVAs, like Rutherford and Stag's Leap, Oakville, and Calistoga, which is the newest addition. And then we have this one that kind of sits on the fence. It's a little bit in Napa Valley and a little bit in Sonoma Coast. So it is Carneros, and it kind of sits the fence of two different bigger appellations, but it's kind of its own significant little piece. So if a grape, if a wine label says that it is from Napa Valley, all right, how much of that wine is actually from Napa Valley? Well, 85% of the grapes have to come from that specific region. So if my wine says that it is from Howell Mountain, which is a very small section in Napa Valley, then 85% of my grapes have to come off of Howell Mountain. They can't have, you know, 50% there and 50% from Napa Valley floor. Now, if it did do that, say I had, you know, 50% from Rutherford and the other 50% were from Howell, then I could just say Napa Valley. Because it didn't, you know, all of it didn't come from one or the other. It's half and half. I can indicate that it comes from two appellations, but I need to also indicate that it's from Napa Valley, because it's not 100% or even 85%, excuse me, 85% from Howell Mountain, and it has to be at least 85%. In California, we also have what I call the 75% rule, which means that if you're going to say the grapes are from California, then 75% have to be in California, which is a little different than your AVA label. So, yeah, it gets all technical. But the main thing you want to pay attention to is if it says Napa Valley, know that the majority of the grapes are coming out of Napa Valley and that that is governed. Some of the grape varietals out of Napa Valley, we kind of touched on this earlier, are Sauvignon Blanc and Chardonnay. And then I mentioned Cabernet and Bordeaux blends, Bordeaux grapes. What in the world does that mean? Bordeaux is a region of France. And that allows five grapes to be put in your red wines, if you're going to call it Bordeaux in France. Only five. It can be Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Malbec, Petit Verdot, and Cabernet Franc. All right? So you've got five that can come in and be in your Bordeaux wine. All right? And they just label those Bordeaux. They don't, if you've ever tried to read a French label and you're new to wine, they talk everything in region. And we're going to get to that when we cover France in a couple weeks. We're going to talk about all those labels and regions and how to make that a little bit easier on you. In the States, we put the grape varietals. But occasionally, you're going to see a bottle of wine from California, primarily, not only California. They come out of Washington State, too. And it's going to say Meritage, M-E-R-I-T-A-G-E, Meritage, or Meritage Blend. And people often ask me, well, I don't like blended wine. I just like Cab. I'm like, well, maybe, but if you're drinking it and it says Cab on it and it's from California, then only 75% of that bottle of wine has to actually be Cabernet. It could be, remember the 75% rule in California, that it could be that 75% are Cab, and then you've got 10% Merlot and 5% Petit Verdot and 5% Malbec, and I think I have one more 5% that I can throw in there, and we'll call it Cabernet Franc. All right, so then it would be called a Bordeaux-style blend or a Meritage, depending on which style and which label they want to put on it. Meritage is a word that they came up with in California a while back, a few years ago, to indicate these wines that are done in a heritage style, an old world style, or a blended style. Why in the world would we blend wines? I mean, I get this question a lot at the store. Why do we blend? Why do we do that? I mean, I just want a straight varietal. Well, remember, most varietals that you're drinking are not 100%. And if you're drinking wines that are from Europe, let's say Europe, most of the time they're going to be blended. Because the French learned a long time ago that Cab is really big and bold. And Merlot has some beautiful, fresh, beautiful fruit on the front of the palate. And sometimes it gets a little shallow in the back palate. So if you mix Cab and Merlot together, all of a sudden you end up with this infusion of flavor that goes all the way across the palate. It comes in with some nice fruit at the front of your tongue for your mouth to kind of get all excited, and then it comes back across the palate with no gaps, and it's full-bodied because Cab is almost always going to be full-bodied. And so it kind of explodes in your mouth, and we're going to talk about full-bodied in just one second. It explodes in your mouth, and then Cabernet just goes on forever. It just lingers and has this big, long finish. And sometimes Merlot doesn't have that big, long finish. So you put the two grapes together, and now you got the best of both worlds. And then if you go in and you add a little Petit Verdot, or you go in and you add a little Malbec, you know, it just adds another level, another nuance, another complexity, you know, so your wine just kind of goes on forever. All right, full-bodied. Let's cover a quick definition. I had it explained to me years ago. Not too many years. I'm not that old. But I had it explained to me several years ago as milk. Just think about milk. And if you've ever had, you know, whole milk, and then you can have 2%, and then you can have skim. And that's kind of what we, best example ever of explaining full-bodied, which would be your whole milk, to being medium-bodied, which would be your maybe your 2%, and then skim, which could even be called thin. You know, and I'm not always a fan of the wines that I would call thin. To me, that's a character flaw. But there are people who really like those. They aren't looking for that explosion or that, you know, saturation in their mouth of all the flavors. And I like wines that are medium-bodied here when it's hot. And by the way, that's what we're going to be talking about next week. Most of you know we're based in Phoenix, by the way, at 32nd Street and Camelback. If you are in Phoenix, we'd love to see you in the store or call us and say hi. But it's hot here. I think we're supposed to be at about 109 or 110 today. And those of us who live here, we get a little grumpy sometimes after about 2 or 3 months of that. And next week, we want to talk about what do we drink when it's hot. You know, we're going to cover some cocktails. We're going to cover some wines. We're going to cover some bubbles. And, you know, sometimes it's just beer. But we are going to talk about what do we drink when the temperature outside is not so friendly. What do we drink to cool off? So anyway, back to these Bordeaux blends. Just wanted to mention what we're going to do next week. The first one that made a really big splash, because it is really not all that new, and often people think it is new. Not even in the States is it really all that new. The first one that was such a huge success was Joseph Phelps. He felt like his wine, his cab, would be much better and much, you know, richer if he put a little Merlot in it. Well, remember the 75% rule in California. If it's not 75% of a specific grape, you can't put a grape varietal on it. So you can't say Cabernet if it's 50-50. So in 1974, Joseph Phelps got a little bold, and he said, you know what? I'm going to make a great bottle of wine. I'm not necessarily going to worry about being able to put Cabernet on it. Now, keep in mind, we haven't even gotten to the Judgment of Paris yet. That was 76, so he's already out there on the fringe, on the edge, trying something new, and we haven't even been identified yet as a world-class country for making wine or a world-class region. 1974, Joseph Phelps produced his Insignia, and to this day, Insignia is often on the 100-point wine list. I know the 2005 vintage was a 100-point wine, according to Wine Spectator magazine. And by the way, you cannot get that anymore unless you're buying it from a collector. It's unfortunate, but that's the way it works. But, you know, so you look at those things, and he had this vision. And then soon after that, others followed. So we ended up with Opus 1, and you may have heard of that. It's about $189, $200 a bottle now. I feel like every time I turn around, that one goes up again. Dominus, Rubicon, Trilogy, the list is just endless of the people who have done the Bordeaux blends since then and that style of Meritage blend. Bordeaux, Meritage, kind of the same thing because we're putting the same grapes in them. It's just Bordeaux is a specific region of France, and Meritage is a little more U.S.-based. But we call them Bordeaux blends or Meritage blends, and I think they're wonderful. They're some of my absolute favorite wines to drink, whether I'm drinking them from Bordeaux or whether I'm drinking them from the States. I love those. And I don't usually afford things like the Insignia, but there's lots of those that are in the affordable price range, and we'll talk about that when we come back. Remember, if you have a question you'd like us to answer here on Around the World in a Glass, you can email it, and please, please feel free to email it to aroundtheworldinaglass@hotmail.com. We're happy to talk about questions you may have about the previous episode. We're happy to talk about food menus. So after the break, we're going to get into some more of these awesome Bordeaux-style blends and the smaller AVAs in Napa. We'll be right back.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Step up to the microphone. View the finalists right now on VoiceAmericaKids.tv. America's next great star is waiting to be discovered. Step Up to the Microphone is an exclusive presentation for VoiceAmerica.tv, where you can see and hear America's next top child star. The program is hosted by Voice America's own Cassie Frazier, and new episodes will be available every week exclusively at VoiceAmericaKids.tv. You can say you saw them at the beginning of their superstar career. Tune in to VoiceAmericaKids.tv.
Have you ever wanted to ask a direct question to a private investigator? If so, you'll want to listen for the Private Eye Nightline with private investigator John Siaccio. John and his guest experts will answer your questions about infidelity, drug issues, custody, restraining orders, and more. Sometimes there are sensitive issues involving a family member or other loved one. We're here to help. The Private Eye Nightline is broadcast live every Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Racism, healing, oneness of humankind. It is time to join millions of people all over the world who openly talk about racial healing. Some of us are not sure how to tread when discussing race and culture. Until now. Tune in to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with host Sharon E. Davis. Engage with experts and notables. Have a question but are not sure how to ask it? Test it out with our show. It's a safe harbor to explore views and situations that we face every day. A Safe Place to Talk About Race airs live every Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Around the World in a Glass, presented by Sportsman's, with your host, Kimber Stonehouse. If you have a question for one of our upcoming programs, please send an email to aroundtheworldinaglass@hotmail.com. That's aroundtheworldinaglass@hotmail.com. Now, back to our show.
All right, we left off talking about Bordeaux and Meritage blends, and was this new? Was this not new? And, of course, we had to talk about the amazing insignia that was started in 1974 with Joseph Phelps. And right as we were heading toward break, I talked a little bit about Opus 1 and Dominus and Rubicon and Trilogy. Opus 1, it was Mondavi and Baron Rothschild out of France, one of the premier first-growth Bordeaux's over there, got together and did a project and called it Opus 1. And to this day, Opus 1 is extremely expensive. It's good. It's extremely, $200, that's just extremely expensive to me. Maybe some of you out there listening are like, oh, no, that's just a walk in the park. I drink that all the time. For my budget, I like to drink things that are around, 15 to 25. Kind of is where my safety zone is. I really like it if I can get great bang for my dollar at a $10 price point. I get a little nervous. I want to have tried those first, though, because I get a little nervous. And I try a lot of wines. So if, I guess I'm a little pickier these days than maybe I was 15 or so years ago when it just had to be alcohol. But anyway, back to Opus 1, Dominus Rubicon Trilogy. Those are some of our great Bordeaux blends. I had a question, actually, from someone here in the studio about how do they blend these? How do they mix them together? Do they, how do they do that? They mix them many times in the barrel. So after they've processed all the Cabernet and it goes off to, they put it in the fermenters and it's starting its processes, and then the Merlot comes, whichever one starts first, and then the Merlot comes in and the Petit Verdot and the Malbec, and they put them all in. They can do it two ways. Sometimes a winery will age them all separately and then make their blends. That's probably the more common. But then after they say they've aged them for 18 months in barrels, big wine barrels, which are really cool, they taste them on a regular basis, and then when they get to a certain stage, they will blend them, and they will have like I've attended before a blending seminar. Coolest thing, you get your little vials of your three or five different bottles of wine, and you make up your little blend, and then you sit and you compete to see whose blend tasted the best today. And, you try to balance out the richness of the cab with the sweetness of the fruitiness of the Merlot and the little spice that you get from Cab Franc. So you try to balance all that out. But then what they'll do is after they've made their blend and made it, however much percent they want of each one from these different barrels, then they will oftentimes blend it, put it back in barrel, and then bottle it. So it's kind of a 3 or 4 step process, and that's kind of winery specific. So they can first age it as all the cab in the barrel, all the Merlot in the barrel, et cetera, and then do their blending seminar, come up with the blend they like the best, and then blend it and put it back in barrel for a while. So what that does is the flavors kind of have this infusion where they go back together. So they kind of all, I don't know, it's like making fruit salad, right? You put it together. To take a really simple example, you put it together and now your strawberries have rubbed up against the blueberries and the little bits of citrus and you just get a nice flavor. Whereas if you just keep it all separate and put it on your plate and mix it together, it's not the same as if it's been mixed in the bowl. The same would be true but not nearly so tasty as chicken salad. I'm a big fan of fruit salad. Chicken salad is good, but again, you put it all together and the flavors begin to become a little more cohesive. They work together. They integrate. And they age together in the barrel than on the grapes and the different wines that you mix together. And then they would bottle it. The other way to do it is to do your blending seminar prior to aging. So before the grapes have any chance of aging and showing what they're going to do, you blend it, and then you put it in barrel to age. And then you hope that your blend doesn't change too much or that it ages in the way that you estimate. Good winemakers probably could do it either way. Everybody has a preference of which way they're going to blend those grapes. So that's how you would create a Meritage or a Bordeaux blend. Right as we were heading into break, I also mentioned that there were some in that affordable price range, because all of them that I mentioned before we're heading into break are going to be, except for the Trilogy, are going to be upwards of $150 a bottle. The Trilogy is done by a winery called Flora Springs. Awesome winery. It runs here in the Phoenix market. It runs about $55 a bottle, I believe. It's one of my favorites, but actually they're all one of my favorites, but that one's affordable for special occasions. I guess that's what makes that one a little bit different. So if you wanted to buy, say, something for dinner tonight, you need something that maybe isn't $50. I call it Wednesday wine. Today's a day I need Wednesday wine. A wine for any day of the week, a wine to just enjoy. And many times here in Arizona, the Napa Valley or just straight California ones are affordable. All right. Maybe not all the Napa Valley, but there are some that are down in that $20 price point. I'm a big fan of Hahn. They make a great little Meritage. Not from California, but a company called Hedges makes a great, it's called Red Mountain. It's about $25 and it's another fantastic bottle of wine. It's going to have a lot of Merlot. They cheat. They add some Syrah, I believe, in that blend. But again, it's a blend, so it's well-rounded, and it's just a good bottle of wine, and it's not outrageous. So you can find these Meritage and Bordeaux-style blends from the States in that affordable price range. The main thing is just to look for the word either Meritage, or sometimes they'll call it a cuvée. Chapelet does their wine called Mountain Cuvée, and it is 23, 24 on the shelf. And it is a Bordeaux-style blend. In fact, we could keep going. The Élevage, done by Chimney Rock, amazing bottle of wine, closer to $80. But, again, it's one of those Élevage is one of those Bordeaux-style blends. It's got 3 or 4 grapes in it, and it changes. You know, so if you like it one vintage, then make sure next vintage that you don't go out and buy, you know, 10 cases if it becomes your favorite. Make sure you taste it, because Bordeaux blends and Meritage blends are going to change with the flavor and variety of the grapes. So each vintage is going to be slightly different. Sometimes it's noticeable, sometimes it isn't. But you want to make sure before you commit to a lot of wine to drink, you make sure that you like this year's vintage, because sometimes the nuances are pretty extreme. A good winemaker is always going to make a good bottle. It's just whether or not it's exactly what you're looking for. All right, we talked briefly about some of the smaller AVAs in Napa. And I think I mentioned Stag's Leap District, Rutherford, Oakville, being a little more on what we call the valley floor. Rutherford is known for the Rutherford dust. So in the wine industry, you know, people are always talking about, oh, yeah, I get the dust. I knew this was from Rutherford. And what it is there's a lot of this dust and kind of dirt, and it comes in through the flavor of the wine. So you kind of left with this little, and yes, it's a good thing. It doesn't sound very good if you don't know what I'm talking about. So you might have to go out and find a bottle of Rutherford. BV is a fantastic bottle of Rutherford Cab. Provenance does one that's more expensive. The BV is going to be about $20, maybe $25 for their Rutherford Cab. The Provenance winery, theirs is going to be closer to $45 or $50. They're both fantastic. It's just those are two that come straight off the top of my head that are really great examples of this Rutherford dust. And you're going to get, you taste that glass of wine, and it just leaves this little, I don't know, little bit of dust. just feels like dust. And it has that kind of flavor profile. So we often talk about, yeah, this one's definitely from Rutherford because it has that dust. When I talk about the mountain AVAs, some of my absolute favorites are from the mountains. And it's funny because you talk to other people in the wine industry and other people at the store, and they're like, oh, I love Mount Veeder. And I'm like, okay, Mount Veeder's good. I mean, I wouldn't turn it away. Don't get me wrong. It's well worth drinking. I love Howell Mountain. Howell Mountain is my favorite. I can almost, not 100% of the time because I don't drink enough apparently, but I can almost always pick out a Howell Mountain wine. And if I'm tasting two or three, say Robert Craig, amazing older gentleman, lives up on Howell Mountain, has about three or four different, at least two, maybe three, different AVAs that are mountain. So he has Mount Veeder, and he has some Howell Mountain. And I was at the winery, and he lays out, you know, three or four of these different wines for us to taste. And so everything is the same. So he uses the same barrels. He picked them at almost the same time when they were ripe. So a certain, they call it Bricks, which is a certain sweetness. He picks them at the same sweetness. And the only thing that is different from his perspective is that they were grown on a different mountain. One's grown on Mount Veeder, which is on one side of the Napa. One's grown on Howell Mountain. And we're tasting them all back to back, these several different wines. And then he has a little blend called Affinity that I absolutely love. You see it on some wine lists. It's usually about $50, $60 in a retail shop, usually $80 or $90 on a wine list most of the time. So anyway, I love the Howell Mountain. I wouldn't say no to the Mount Veeder, but I love the Howell Mountain. And then O'Shaughnessy does a Howell Mountain and a Mount Veeder. And every time I taste those, it's just something about the Howell Mountain. It's got a slatiness and a dryness along the jaw and just this distinctiveness that I love. Some of the people at the shop over at Sportsman's, they love Mount Veeder. So it's, and customers are the same way. I've got one customer, and every time we talk about it, he leans a little more toward Mount Veeder. I like the Howell Mountain. It's just what appeals to you. So if you ever get the opportunity to taste the same wine owner, same winery owner, same winemaker in two or three different AVAs like that, where you can taste Howell Mountain, Mount Veeder, Atlas Peak, or Spring, or Diamond, take that opportunity. It's the one of the coolest things you'll ever get to do, because you'll all of a sudden you'll be like, I had no idea they were that different. I had no idea they could be that drastic in their taste and their nuances. It's so one of the cooler things I've had the opportunity to do while I've been in the wine industry is to do that. And then you start to realize what you like. Diamond Mountain is one I want to talk about real quick. Spring is gorgeous. Cane is up there. C-A-I-N. Cane Winery is up there. I love their wines. Spring Mountain is really cool. I'm going to get to Diamond real quick. But Spring Mountain's really cool because you can stand on Spring Mountain if you're there like 7:30 in the morning. It's kind of brutal when you're on a wine trip to be anywhere at 7:30 in the morning. But you get to see the fog roll in to the valley, because that's a very big aspect of cooling the vines down in the morning and starting with that dampness. And then the heat comes in and sears all the fog away, and then the heat takes up, and then, you know, you do it all over again the next day. And it's just, it's really cool to see the fog roll into the valley from all the way out by the ocean. Diamond Mountain, one of the most prestigious mountain AVAs. You've got Diamond Creek that comes off of that. Some of the most expensive wines to command the $100 and the $200 price point coming out of Napa in the late 70s was Diamond Creek. They're awesome. We have a little wine that comes off of Diamond Mountain that we love that's from Von Strasser. So it sells for about $52 a bottle. And I love that one because I get all the beauty of Diamond Mountain without the Diamond Creek prices of $200 a bottle, which is a little out of my everyday drinker budget. We are going to go to break. I've got a few tips about from Brian's tips. Brian was supposed to be with us today, and he ended up having a child who was a little bit sick, so he couldn't come in. So he's given me a few of his tips on Napa, and we're going to talk about that when we come back from the break.
News. Opinion. Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
Every week, tune in to the Gun Sports Radio Show with host and shooting enthusiast Mick Langfield. Our show is all about the sport of shooting, whether you're just getting started or an expert. We're sure that you'll learn something from every show. Mick and his guests will bring you tips, feedback, and even criticism of some of the aspects of the sport. It's not a gun geek show. We'll talk about recreational and competitive shooting, safety, training, and personal defense. The Gun Sports Radio Show airs Fridays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Around the World in a Glass, presented by Sportsman's, with your host, Kimber Stonehouse. If you have a question for one of our upcoming programs, please send an email to aroundtheworldinaglass@hotmail.com. That's aroundtheworldinaglass@hotmail.com. Now, back to our show.
All right. Back to Napa Valley and all the amazing wine coming out of there. If you do have any questions, make sure that you email them in. Next week, we're going to talk about summer wines and what to drink when it's really hot. Our email address is aroundtheworldinaglass@hotmail.com. I did check it, and we had a few comments, but no serious questions. Remember, if you've got a food menu pairing that is giving you some grief, or you don't know what to serve for 4th of July, we could cover that next week. So at least exactly, I think, a week out. We're also going to cover some other things about summer wines and what to drink when it's hot. We're going to talk about here in Phoenix how to get your summer wine to the pool without breaking those all serious rules of it has to be in a plastic container, because, of course, you can't have glass at the pool. That's not a good idea to have glass at the pool. So we're going to talk about some of those things next week, what to drink when it's hot and how to get it to where you want it, even if it's like going hiking or something, how to get what you want to drink where you're going. All right, so Brian couldn't be with us, but he is a Napa fan, and he gave me some of his notes. I have some of my own ideas, too, because I've been to Napa several times and have always enjoyed myself when I'm there, but you know, Brian, he's the connoisseur of Napa. So if you have questions, I'll be happy to let Brian answer them. So please email him in, and I'll make Brian write them up so I can answer him next time when he can't be here. So if you're going to go, I flew in to Sacramento. So you can fly in a couple of different places. You can fly into San Francisco or Oakland, or you can fly into Sacramento. I like to fly into Sacramento. So does Brian. That was one of his tips he gave me. He's like, I don't ever fly in to San Francisco. If you're going to be staying in San Francisco in addition to going to Napa, then you might want to, you know, stay in San Francisco and go ahead and fly in there. But I prefer to fly into Sacramento. You fly in. I rent my car. And then I'm a fan of the scenic route. Yes, I'm one of those people who will follow a map and take 2 hours or 4 hours to get someplace that it should have taken, you know, 45 minutes or an hour and a half to get there. Brian, he takes the big freeway. So you can look it up on any map, and it'll have the big freeway. I think it's a four lane just about the whole way from Sacramento straight into Napa. It's got some little side roads when you get close. I take the little side streets, the little road that goes through all the beautiful scenic areas that takes you by a lake. I mean, I don't know the name of the highway, but it goes through, well, you're doing 30 and 35 for part of it, and it's about a 2.5 hour drive instead of the hour or so that it would be if I went on the freeway. But it's gorgeous. It's well worth driving at least once. And yes, you will see campers and motorcycles and people who are out for their Sunday drives, as well as 25 and 35 mile an hour speed limits. So only go that way if you have plenty of time and you like to gawk at the scenery, because that's what I like to stop and smell the roses. I don't want to be in a rush. I like to savor my wine. I like to stop and smell the roses. So I took the long way to get there. So that's our choices. We both fly into Sacramento instead of into San Francisco, just because the airport's easier to navigate. It's smaller. There's not as many people there. It just works well. So we fly into Sacramento and drive our way over to Napa Valley. We often have a little bit of perk being in the business. We often get to stay at a winery. Those are a little harder to come by. So the hotels are going to be somewhat expensive. There's a big fancy one actually in the town of Napa Valley. You can stay there if you like, I think it's better to stay in some of the little kind of off the beaten path ones along the way and along the route. That's just my personal. There's one, I think it's called El Bonita, and a lot of people stay there from the trade when we can't get lodging, and it's not going to be cheap. It's Napa Valley. Nothing there is going to be inexpensive. But the one hotel down in the city is out of the way. It's a long cab ride, and it's somewhat expensive. I've stayed there once, but I wouldn't stay there again. It's too far away. Brian had some picks for some winery places, and then if you want to go have a picnic, Dean and DeLuca is there, so that's a really cool place. Even if you decide you don't want to buy anything there, you can certainly go there and shop. It's cool. There's all kinds of cool stuff. You'll see their wine shop, which is going to be focused around California wines, and, you know, all the other kind of cool stuff that Dean and DeLuca is known for. I loved Oakville Grocery. It's awesome. It's right on the main drag going through the Napa Valley area, and I just stopped in there the first time just to see what it was, because I had heard about it forever in the industry. And the Oakville Grocers, you just stop in there, and it's packed with really cool, you know, fresh foods, local foods, olives. It's got a deli with meats and cheeses and sandwiches and things like that. So it's really kind of just everything under the sun, and it's not in a very big building. So parking is atrocious, but it's well worth going to, so don't miss it. If it's hot in the summer, the patio or the outdoor seating is going to be cramped. And last time I was there, part of it was in straight up in the sun. The trees weren't very big yet. And they had planted and tried to create some more outdoor space. But you'll see people kind of sprawled all over the porch, what would I would call the porch in the Midwest, in the front. So it's kind of like, it looks like a little bit of an old house, but that they have converted into this big grocer. But, yeah, parking's atrocious, and it's going to be packed. It's really cool and well worth going to, though. But don't do it if you're just trying to rush in and dash and grab something to eat quickly, because you're just going to be irritated and frustrated, because it's very hard to walk through and there's so much to see. You really want to take some time there. So that's where to go if you want to get some picnic stuff and try to find a place to have a picnic outside. It's really cool. Some of the wineries that I've been to and just had the time of my life, and Brian has a similar list. We were comparing notes this last week on where we like to go when we're there. And some of the places that I've been, he got to go to Paradigm, and I did not get to go to Paradigm yet. So that's on my list of places to go. I've been to Gergich, and Gergich is awesome. They do what we call biodynamic farming. They're very passionate about biodynamic farming. And briefly, because I know we don't have much time left today, I want to mention what biodynamic is compared to organic, compared to sustainable. Nearly everybody in Napa is doing what we call sustainable. And that means that they're doing the best they can with the crops and the soil that they have. So it means that they're doing a very limited use of any type of herbicides or pesticides. That's the primary thing that people are talking about right now. And sustainable means they're either not using that at all, or in maybe a problematic area, maybe the place that's right by a river or a creek or something that seems to have some kind of a pest that they can't get rid of in that specific area, they might still use a pesticide or an herbicide. But sustainable means that they are doing everything that they can do to keep it sustainable, to keep the land and the grapes and the wine coming out of there sustainable for the future. It's very much a futuristic look. Then after the sustainable, you get organic. And organic means that they are following a very strict definition of what they can do and not do. And so you can look that up if you like, but it's a very strict method of what they're allowed to do. Biodynamic is kind of the next level off to the right. So you'd say maybe left is sustainable, or even worse than sustainable, and then organic, and then you would say biodynamic. And biodynamic is all the way over to the crazy right, and or crazy left, whichever way you want to focus. Biodynamic means that they follow a very strict set of rules, and Gergich Hills follows that, even more strict than organic. Their wines are amazing. They are not inexpensive. They are amazing. And I've always been treated so well when I've gone there. Other places, real quick. I mentioned Robert Craig earlier and loving being up on his mountain with him. I'm sure you're going to have to make an appointment. Neil, which is no longer available in the Phoenix market, much to my dismay, because the wines are amazing. Neil is another one. Their winery is up on Howell Mountain. They have fruit there and down on the valley floor. Amazingly nice people. Again, make an appointment, because they're not somebody who just has a big tasting room open, so make sure you call them in ahead of time. Quintessa, it's going to cost you some money, but it's a beautiful one, beautiful facility to just go in and taste in their tasting room. Domaine Carneros, one of my favorites. I'm a big fan of bubbles, and that will come out in every show. Absolutely love my bubbles. Domaine Carneros is sitting on that fence. Remember, we talked about that region earlier of Carneros. That's part in Sonoma, part in Napa. Domain Carneros sits right there. It's a gorgeous place to go have a cheese plate and bubbles for your early morning, say 10 o'clock, brunch, lunch, whatever you want to call it. It's gorgeous there. Looks out over the fields. It's just really beautiful. Schramsberg is in, I believe their base is in Napa, another place for bubbles. Domain Carneros is probably my preference of the two, but they're both going to be awesome. Pride. Kane, I mentioned up on Spring Mountain, that again would be by appointment only. So I'm trying to cram them all right in here at the end, but we are just about out of time this week. So if you have more questions, you want more input on Napa Valley, we'd be happy to answer those. Coming up next week, we've got summer wines and what to drink when it's hot. And by the way, that is capitalized. It is hot here in Phoenix. As always, if you have a wine question you'd like us to answer or anything else, about wine or, and maybe another beverage. Maybe you've got a question about a cocktail. Please email it to us at aroundtheworldinaglass@hotmail.com, and we'll be happy to discuss that and more. And next week, again, summer wines, maybe some food pairings too, and how to get your wine where you're going, if you're hiking or biking. We'll see you next week.
Thanks again for tuning in. Around the World in a Glass is heard every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Please join Kimber Stonehouse from Sportsman's Fine Wines and Spirits next week for another glass.